Welcome to the Divorce Podcast, a podcast that aims to address divorce, separation and co-parenting here in the UK, countering the often sensationalist way it's portrayed in the media, challenging the status quo and driving for reform. On each episode, I'm joined by experts to discuss divorce, separation and co-parenting from different angles and to give their opinions and to debate them. I'm Kate Daly, a relationship counsellor and divorce coach, co-founder of Amicable and host of the Divorce Podcast. In this episode, I'm delighted to be joined by Rosie Wilby. Rosie Wilby is an award-winning comedian, author and podcaster who's appeared many times on BBC Radio 4 programmes, including Woman's Hour and Forethought. Her first book, Is Monogamy Dead?, was longlisted for the Polari First Book Prize and followed a trilogy of solo shows investigating the psychology of love and relationships. Her new book, The Breakup Monologues, is based on her acclaimed podcast of the same name. Welcome, Rosie.
Hello, it's lovely to be here.
It's brilliant to have you. Thank you for agreeing to join us. I wonder if we can start by talking a little bit about those wonderful podcasts that you're doing, the Breakup Monologues. I heard you say that you started the podcast after you were dumped on email. Is that really true? Is that what led to your interest in love and relationships?
It is really, because I am a comedian, so I'm always looking for topics to explore that will be relatable and universal, but also I can have a personal delve into, and perhaps I can learn something from doing that delving and digging. So when I was dumped by email, I joked at the time that I felt much better after I had corrected my ex's spelling and punctuation and changed the font. But of course, in reality, it had come as a shock, and it was very painful and a very difficult time. And so, you know, I wanted to investigate that through my performance, but also use that opportunity to get on stage and talk about the breakup and how it had felt as an opportunity for learning and healing and my own self-development. So I've always sort of, you know, combined performance and my own kind of learning and growth and healing. It's that strange fertile ground between art and also your own therapy, which a lot of comedians
would be with. Well, I guess as a comedian, you're a studier of human nature, aren't you? And breakups is something that probably affects the majority of your audience, I guess, at some point in their lives. And yet it's a topic that gets very short shrift. We don't talk about it very often, do we? So I think it's quite a brave thing to bring up such a difficult topic. How do you navigate people's uncomfortableness around breakups?
Well, it's really interesting because I think you're right. A few years ago when I first started the podcast in 2018, after having toured a trilogy of shows about the psychology of love, which ended with my solo show about my breakup, and that show was called The Conscious Uncoupling. That was touring around sort of 2016 and 2017. And around that time, it really felt like we did not talk about breakups. Whereas now, I think that conversation is around in the ether a lot more. There are more women writing books about divorce and separation. There are more podcasts about divorce. You know, I thought I was sort of the only one, and now there are plenty. So I think it's quite interesting that, you know, I hope I played some part in beginning this conversation and opening it up, because we do need to talk about it. And studies actually show that sharing our stories can help us to heal, because we feel less alone when we start to realize that other people have been through the same process and they've, you know, experienced the same kind of feelings and thoughts. And we are effectively withdrawing from a drug when we are recovering from a breakup. So it's no wonder that we do feel so all at sea, but it is a comfort, I think, to know that other people have been through the same thing. So that's really what a lot of my comedy shows and the podcast, when we record it live with an audience, which thankfully we're able to do again now, it's very much about creating that sense of community of people who've been heartbroken. And I suppose that's part of why I have been careful to use the term breakup rather than specifically divorce, because I'm a gay woman, and within my community, many of us have not been able to get married until very recently. So we haven't been getting divorced, but we've had significant relationships that have ended, and those breakups have been the equivalent of a divorce. So I think the language I've used is carefully chosen to be inclusive.
Yeah, very deliberate, because I guess as well, marriage is a declining institution and more people choose to live together, whatever their sexual status. So the idea that it's a breakup that can affect anybody is kind of quite important, isn't it? I think it goes back to what you're saying earlier as well. I like the idea that you learn from the breakup, and that's a big part of what we try and do with our divorce services, is to try and help people move on to that state of doing it much more consciously. You use the word consciously uncoupling, which was the word that Gwyneth used a long time ago, wasn't it, and got laughed at. But it is a much more conscious process, and I do think that people can learn, and I think we have to learn to do it better, because I firmly believe we're all going to have very many more relationships. Gone are the days where you married once and married for life. We're getting a lot older, we're living a lot longer. The opportunity to have multiple monogamous relationships is far more prevalent. So skilling up people to navigate these inevitable life events seems really important. Do you see that in the work you do, or do you see yourself as an educator?
Yes, I think I do, because the comedy world is great for making quite tricky topics really accessible. And so making, you know, perhaps the drier science of psychology and why the brain works in a certain way actually fun and accessible. And, you know, there are lots of interesting academic textbooks that you could read about heartbreak, about love, about attraction, about sexual orientation, about the biology and psychology of how all of these things work. But you might find those quite difficult to get into, whereas I try and, you know, have funny graphs and get people involved in experiments and surveys on stage, and then pull people up from the audience, or, you know, ask surveys about people's breakup stories and try and make it fun and make it relatable for people, so that they can go, gosh, that is what is happening to me, and that's why I feel like this. So I think that sort of sense of being an educator has really been part of the work, particularly back when I began my trilogy of shows all about love and relationships. It began with a show called The Science of Sex, which really was like a spoofy and subversive sex ed lesson, like the kind that you wish you'd had at school, that was inclusive of LGBT relationships, did maybe think about non-monogamy and different ways of having relationships, as opposed to the very traditional normative narrative of marriage and two children.
Yeah. We were talking to Lucy Fry on one of the earlier podcasts about polyamory and that kind of thing. So it's been a real interesting journey to uncover whether or not there are common threads, or whether or not there are even any differences in a breakup when it's not a heterosexual relationship. So it's been a fascinating debate so far. What do you think that researching relationship breakups has taught you, if anything, about being in a relationship?
I think so much, because I think when we break up, we learn about what we need and what we want in a relationship, and where that relationship might not have been meeting our needs, and where we fell short of meeting our partner's needs, and we are better equipped to make a better choice going forwards, I believe. And so my new book, The Breakup Monologues, is really, if you read it, it's really all about staying together. Now that I've met somebody I want to try and work at it with, and we've been together 5 years now, and it's really all about navigating the day-to-day of a relationship and staying together, being informed by your perhaps slightly roller coaster, serially monogamous past.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think you and I have come at it from those two different angles that you described earlier. You've come at it as a comedian, I've come at it as an academic. So my thesis was in relationship breakdown, interesting, breakup versus breakdown, but breakdown. And I found when I was doing that, I was just getting engaged and just getting married. I found it quite difficult to research and to carry on with that research whilst I was in that super excited state of, yay, I'm engaged and getting married. I wonder if you shared that experience, or whether you found a different experience. Was it difficult or was it easier to talk about breakups when you were in such an excited state of being engaged and getting married?
Well, yes. I mean, it's a really interesting journey that I've been on, because this is the first time I have been in a relationship where we are, you know, really compatible and interested in getting married, and that has been a legal option. I was actually proposed to back in my first serious relationship in the 1990s, before even civil partnerships were a thing. And my girlfriend at the time, we'd actually been through a very dramatic time after my mum had sadly passed away, and we'd had a serious house fire and lost our home and so many of our belongings. And in the toilets at Curry House, when we'd been salvaging all our stuff and we were stained in soot, she asked, "Will you marry me?" And at the time, I didn't really know, you know, what she meant, because we couldn't even do it then. And I think we both realised then that our relationship actually was over and it had been great, but so many things had happened to us that we were just on the cusp of turning 30, and we perhaps needed to go our separate ways to recover from for me, traumatic event of losing my mother, and then for both of us, this traumatic event of losing our home and all of our stuff. And so, yes, it felt like there was this huge amount of loss, and then obviously the loss of the relationship, but we did stay friends, as is often the case in gay women's circles. And I believe, I know you mentioned Gwyneth Paltrow, but I believe lesbians pioneered conscious uncoupling long before Gwyneth, except we just didn't.
Okay.
Because I think in queer communities, you have to stay amicable and have to stay friends with your ex. And actually, lesbian society was very, very small. Before there were gay bars, women used to congregate in each other's houses in very small social groups. So it was inevitable that you were still going to be part of a social circle with your ex. So you had to really go through that painful process of working things out so you could be amicable and so you could see one another around and about, and you could accept seeing your partner with somebody new, which is always very difficult. But it's always been a thing in lesbian society that if you can stay friends with your ex, it's a bit of a rule almost.
Yeah, but don't you think as a society it's a good ambition to have, because you don't want to be putting out hate and horribleness back out into the world, do you? And for all the damage you do to a person, you're putting another damaged person out there who then goes on to damage another. So I kind of think there's a momentum to this. When you've got kids involved as well, there's another reason to stay friends. And so there are many more reasons, I think, as a society, we're grasping the importance of making sure you break up well. And it goes beyond just one factor, but there are so many reasons to do it well, because we want to try and evolve as a society and become better at this. I really do believe that.
Oh, absolutely. As we live much longer lives, and as you pointed out, with perhaps lifelong monogamy, the original meaning of monogamy is unrealistic. You know, the monos gamos, one marriage for life, it now means more one marriage at a time. So, yeah, I think you're right. It's unrealistic, but we do need to, where we can, try to separate amicably. And I think another reason why it's been possible in the LGBT community is because there's almost this bigger enemy, if you like, to sort of unite against than one another. There's this bigger sort of dark cloud of homophobia and prejudice. And I think because you've both got that to sort of rebel and fight against and kind of be united against, that almost helps you to realize that you shouldn't fight with one another, because there are bigger things to, you know, be concerned about and feel angry about or hurt or sad about. And perhaps now, you know, there's a bigger thing in the world because we've been through this pandemic. So maybe, you know, situations like that perhaps make people see a little bit, or try to see a little bit, beyond our own very, very personal interior world and our own feelings. And I think what I try to do in the book a lot is try to interrogate where those feelings come from and why we've been triggered by a particular breakup, and what, you know, what incidents, what past events are coming up for us. You know, I look at why a breakup with a woman I only had a couple of dates with, it brought up a lot of painful stuff for me, and how it sort of had echoes of when I felt excluded and bullied at school. So I think it's interesting to delve into childhood experiences that have hurt us, that sometimes breakups and rejections trigger again and bring up memories of.
Mm. It sounds like you do a lot of reflecting after each relationship. Is that like in a formal context with a therapist, or is it something you've learned to do just yourself?
A bit of both. I saw a therapist for a short time, and it was only, I say a short time because she was really expensive. She was absolutely brilliant, but I couldn't afford her for that long. But she was great, and we saw each other for, I don't know, maybe 8-10 sessions after my last breakup, which was a very amicable breakup, but I realised there was a sort of psychological traffic jam of all the old breakups to sort of process a little bit. And I think what was interesting was myself and my fiancé, when we first met in 2017, or no, right at the end of 2016, we had both, or were both still in therapy at the time that we met. So we were both in quite a good place because we were dealing with old stuff. And I think we were both in quite a healthy place where we'd had a bit of therapy and had talked things through and had been able to process what had happened in those other relationships that hadn't worked out, had disappointed us. We both had experiences of partners being somewhat ashamed of being in a gay relationship, and that can be a very, very painful situation, that invisibility.
Presumably it's a lot to carry if one of you is embarrassed and the other one is fully comfortable and out and open to their friends and family.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess it's like leading a bit of a lie, isn't it?
It's really tough because you don't feel you can sort of move forward in the relationship and do the formal things like move in together. Or, you know, at that time when I was in that relationship, that was probably one time I did feel broody for children. But, you know, I thought, well, how can we even think about that? Because we can't even tell her parents that we're a couple. So it feels really difficult to start formalising the relationship in any of those kind of ways. I mean, again, I obviously found the sort of dark humour in the sadness, and I did joke that she once tried to reassure me by telling me that her parents had enjoyed the film Brokeback Mountain. Which yes. Probably isn't giving a positive sense of how those relationships turn out, but there we are.
You mentioned before the term monogamy, and obviously you've written on the subject, and your book is Monogamy Dead. When you're sort of looking at that topic, are you thinking about monogamy in its original form, as you said, one marriage for life, or were you thinking about it and looking at it as in, you know, one relationship at a time? And whichever the answer to that question is it dead? What did you conclude now that you are potentially headed for one type of monogamous relationship, or in one?
Yeah, well, I am in a monogamous relationship, certainly in the way that we currently societally seem to define it, which is sexually exclusive for the time that it lasts. As you say, we're quite a serially monogamous society now. Yeah, I sort of, in a kind of fairy tale way, still do rather love the notion of one marriage for life. My parents did stay together until my mum died, and my dad has never even met anyone else after that, even though, you know, we've had 20 years without my mum. But he has lots of friends, and I don't think he's unhappy. I think he just adored my mum, and she was the one for him, even though, you know, I think we all have more than one soulmate in life. But
I hope so.
I do think so, and I think we can have different soulmates for different parts of our life. But I also think it's really sweet, and there's something lovely about the fact that, you know, my dad was so devoted to my mum. It's said that he hasn't met anyone else, but he also has a very full life with lots of different types of connections and relationships and friendships and neighbours and local community and local groups that he's involved with, and going out, you know, and enjoying local nature and walks, and, you know, with lots of friends. So, yeah, I do sort of, in a way, hanker for the old-fashioned monogamy a little bit, and I hope very much that my fiancé and I are able to make a go of it for the rest of our lives from this, I think, quite mature and informed midlife point. I think we are more realistic than we would have been in our 20s. And I think we have a better chance because of that to make it last. But equally, I think, you know, not being afraid of breaking up, knowing that you can survive it, is important and can sort of help you stay together in a way. I think if you know that breaking up would be okay, it's horrible, but you can do it, amicably. You can do it and survive it and get through it. You might even be a bit energized and transformed by it. You might even find that you start an exciting new career as a bit of a byproduct of that kind of kickstart.
Yeah, case in point.
Exactly. So I think, you know, there's something to be said for the old school monogamy, but equally, we, you know, let's be realistic, we are a more serially monogamous society now. But I think the very rapid cycle of serial monogamy, as we wrote a bit about in my book, Is Monogamy Dead? And I think I was finding that a bit wearying and toxic at times.
What, the Love Island version of monogamy, you mean?
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, have you talked about breaking up with your fiancé, or is that a step too far? Is that, like, not the thing? I don't mean as in have you been on the cusp of breaking up. I mean as in have you had that discussion about what would happen if, and can we agree some ground rules for if we, one of us decides that they're not happy or whatever? Is that the sort of level of mature conversation that goes on?
Yes. We could, you know, we do have mature conversations about that, although I think money is quite triggering for both of us. And I've not really experienced so much of a real issue around money in a relationship before. Like, I think sexual jealousy has always been the trigger point and the flash point and the problem before, whereas I think because of all the work I've done around monogamy, that forced us to have discussions about that, because I was thinking about it so much, having just written a book all about it. I think we can have quite mature discussions about fancying people, about flirting, and about, I mean, not that either of us is interested in anyone else, but I think we can talk about those kind of things quite well and quite helpfully, whereas money is a really sensitive issue for us, because I earn less, because comedians are not paid that well.
You're a comedian, yep.
When all the gigs are closed. And also, I think I have often felt, I do feel hurt by, in the publishing industry, LGBT authors that get paid less than heterosexual authors because we're seen as more niche. So that brings up a whole lot of painful stuff. And it's really tough. So I have to deal with quite a lot of painful emotions around money. So, yeah, when we do have discussions around what is the financial setup if we were to break up, we have kind of that paperwork regarding the house that we live in, which is my partner's house that she bought. And that's probably the worst row we've ever had, was what my sort of contributions to that represent. And that was a really, really difficult big row. Although we've sort of, I think we've moved forward with that now, because we have very, very luckily, unfortunately, we have been able to get a great deal on a little tiny flat by the sea in Margate, which my name is on as well. So I feel like, even though I earn a terrible, pitiful salary, and I do sort of feel
on the ladder,
security about it, I have been able to get on the property ladder. So that sort of is a hugely boosting kind of thing, because I've always had this insecurity about money because of not earning very much from the work that I do, even though I think it's valuable work that people message me about really getting something from. So yeah, I think money is tricky in our relationship, but we have now had those conversations and drawn up sort of paperwork.
But it sounds like you've created the platform for having the difficult conversations, and that's because you're comfortable talking about the subject of breakups, which is really what some of this podcast and I guess yours as well is all about, isn't it? It's trying to say to people, there is a way of doing this and being skillful about it, and it does involve some quite difficult conversations, but they're doable.
And it helps when push comes to shove, when you're actually dealing with the breakdown of the relationship, if you've had some of these conversations or you've gone into relationships understanding the financial and legal contract that's been made when you marry, that becomes really important. Because I think a lot of what we deal with at the moment is people who've perhaps been married for 10, 15, 20 years, where those conversations about finances and what would happen if you went your separate ways just didn't happen. I think you're right. I think people are talking about it now and we're becoming way more informed. And I think it's absolutely key that people understand the difference between being in a cohabiting relationship and being in a marriage, because there is a legal difference and the law treats the splitting and the division of property and assets very differently when you're married to when you're cohabiting.
Yes, and actually probably one really interesting aspect for us is pet custody as well.
Yes, let's talk pet custody. Your pet parents, are you then?
Yes, so we're not parents of human babies, but we have a dog and two cats, and they really are our pet. We adore them. And so this was definitely an area that I wanted to explore both on my podcast and in the book, because I think for many people who don't have children, your pets really do become vital. I mean, I think they're vital if you do have children as well. I know some women who say they love the dog more than their children, but I'm not sure they really mean that.
But we're doing a lot. We're having far more inquiries about pet nups and pet plans and things like that for when, you know, if you do split up, what happens. And there are all sorts of costs, as well as the wanting to maintain the connection and staying in touch and seeing the pet, aren't there? So go on. What kind of conversations have you been having?
Initially, it was sort of quite clear cut, because I came into the relationship with a cat who appears in the book as Cat. And then when we've been together about 18 months or so, we got a dog who in the book is Dog. And you read a lot in the book about my relationship with Dog and how at first she's absolutely adorable and I fell in love with her. But I had quite a strange and tense relationship with the dog at first, because she was so naughty and always running off and being naughty and chewing up my glasses and best clothes and shoes and everything. So I was quite happy with the fact that, you know, my girlfriend in the book is more the dog person, and she had paid for the dog, and so the dog would be her baby and the cat would be my baby. But I think those things are much more muddied now. Now we've been together so much longer. And really, when we had this terrible row at the end of last year about money, for a moment I went to bed that night mentally sort of packing my bags and thinking, I can leave, I'm going to get. And you don't really need it, but in that moment you sort of feel hurt and upset, and why is she talking to me like that? But it was really the first thing that popped into my head that made me think, no, I can't leave, with the dog.
It's amazing what binds you together. Yeah.
The dog, I can't leave. And then I thought about myself and actually how much I do with her and great she is as well. But it really was the dog that was sort of the first thing that made me think, I can't go.
So will you put a plan in place to say what happens to the cats and the dogs if, you know, something awful goes wrong in the relationship? Or
yes, definitely we will do, because I think that is so important. We will sort of put some, we haven't got anything sort of formal in writing about that yet, but we certainly will do. It's more complicated again now because we've got another little cat who absolutely adored the dog. So you couldn't really split those.
Okay, yes. Yeah. it's exactly like children, isn't it? Not wanting to keep them all together and then having to work out how that all works.
No, it really is. So many things to consider. And as you say, it's good to have had the conversation when you're getting on well, just so you have at least agreed something.
I think that's the most important thing. I think that's what I've taken away from, you know, listening to you and listening to some of your podcasts as well. It's that sense that to have the conversation, whilst it's not a big emotional, browbeating, tearful, screaming argument, to have it in the cold light of day and to employ a bit of humor when you have it as well. That's the kind of foundation for a mature relationship, isn't it? So to think through rather than just blithely do the fairy tale princess, this divorce thing or breakup thing that happens to over half the population isn't going to happen to us, rather than go down that road, to actually confront, to have the conversations, to be comfortable talking about what is a difficult subject without it meaning that somehow you're planning to leave or that you somehow think there's something wrong with the relationship, but to actually to have a positive conversation about the possibility of the breakup of the relationship. I think it's, as you say, it leads to a stronger relationship.
Oh, I think so, definitely, yeah. I think there was an episode of the podcast where Sindhu V was on and was saying, you know, you have to be ready to pack your bags and go. You almost have to have your bag packed to, you know, and know that you could and you'd be fine. Well, not exactly fine, but, you know, you could carry on. You could actively
be choosing to stay in the relationship, like you were saying before, you know, that choice to stay and the desire to stay rather than feeling economically bound to stay or whatever is important, isn't it?
You're not just held hostage by it. I've certainly been in relationships where, I don't know, my kind of need and obsession and desire for the other person has kind of held me hostage. There's like a sort of, I don't know whether it's a more immature kind of love, but you're so obsessed and infatuated with the person that you just can't bear the thought that you wouldn't be with them. And you're really bound by that. And that it just feels like, yeah, if that feels awful. Whereas now I don't know, like there are things where I think, oh, you know, being single and being on my own wouldn't be so bad because I have so much more time to do all my work and creative projects because life gets so busy when you're living together and you've got, you know, domestic chores and thinking about the house and planning a wedding and you know, kind of looking after three pets, one of whom, sadly, our new little cat is very disabled, so he requires tons of care. But, yeah, you know, so I think being aware of the fact that being single, you know, for a woman particularly, has evolved and now isn't this terrible thing, you know, it can be quite a liberating thing. And knowing that, you know, that if it happened, wouldn't be the end of it is quite healthy. And I think it kind of helps you stay, really.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I was just, we're running out of time, but I just wanted to ask you one final thing. So if there are people listening to this who are in the midst of a breakup and, you know, the world is literally falling in on them at this point, do you have any optimistic advice or clever thoughts to help them?
Well, firstly, I would say you're definitely not alone. And I think that is the most important thing. And that's why I started my podcast, was to create a sense of community around all of us who've been through this terrible, heartbreaking experience of going through a breakup and experiencing this effectively a withdrawal from the exciting drugs of, you know, having that person near us and having lots of fantastic sex and dates and flirtation and text messages and flirty emails or whatever. Showing my age there, emails, who sent those? Yeah, I do think it's good to know that we're not alone. Loads of us have been through breakups and we have come out the other side. And it sometimes can be the beginning of something new and exciting in your life and a gateway to sort of transformation and reinvention of yourself and actually discovering yourself in a completely new way, it's a completely new level. So it's certainly not the end. And in my book, I actually deliberately tell the first half of the book backwards and the second half forwards because I want to play with the idea that beginnings and endings are sort of the same thing. So any ending is definitely the beginning.
Brilliant. Well, just a quick shout out, remind us of the title of the books and where you can find them.
Yes, so I have two books. My first book is called Is Monogamy Dead? And the second book is The Breakup Monologues, The Unexpected Joy of Heartbreak. And they're on Amazon, Waterstones, or all good bookshops. Your local indie bookshop should be able to order it as well. So yeah, if you're able to maybe even post a little review on Amazon if you've enjoyed it, that would be really fantastic. Or get in touch with me on Twitter at Rosie Gordon or Instagram at Breakup Monologues. It's always lovely to hear from people who enjoyed the work, because I'm particularly keen to access a broad range of people who've experienced breakups. I do write from the experience of being a gay woman, but I think a lot of what I have to say is appropriate for everybody. I mean, I joke in the beginning of the book that lesbians are sort of the world champions of breakups, because statistically, apparently, we go through the most breakups more than anybody else. Our divorce rate is higher than anybody else's. So I do think the gay community has pioneered a lot of interesting concepts like conscious coupling long before anybody else, and things like living apart together.
Or, I feel like I've really irked you by quoting Gwyneth now as well. I take it back.
It's absolutely fine. You know, of course she made that phrase pretty famous. But yes, I do think that there's a lot that we can learn more broadly to support everybody, the heteronormative, heterosexual community, from how the queer community have approached breakups and relationships and love over the past few decades. Because I think we sometimes try things and experiment with things before everybody else does. So I think we're almost a little bit ahead of the curve. So I do think there's a lot to be gained from looking to kind of queer speakers and authors and comedians and performers as to what they have to say about relationships, because we might have some interesting ideas that we haven't thought of.
Well, you lead, we follow. It's been fascinating, Rosie, talking to you. Really different and interesting take, and just really lovely to be able to talk about breakups in more detail rather than glossing over and just focusing on some of the legal processes. So thank you for being so candid and for sharing that. And I can personally say I've really enjoyed listening to your podcast as well. It's fantastic. So I highly recommend the podcast to anyone that's listening. And of course, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at Kate_Daly. You can hear about new podcast episodes by following at @divorce_podcast. And you can subscribe to this podcast at thedivorcepodcast.com. It's been a pleasure talking to Rosie. Thank you very much for listening.